I mean, even today, if you're a strong man and a strong woman, and you walk into a building, are you supposed to open the door for the woman, Andrea?
Well, I think a gentleman would still open the door.
I do, thank you very much. I go for the door handle no matter who it is. Whether she's going to slap me in the head or beat me over the head with something or say, hey, great, thanks, man.
Or, well, I don't speak for all women. I never pretend to. I am a feminine girly girl, and I wear my alpha bitch pants when I need to get shit done. But yes, I appreciate a man who is still going to open the door and, you know, let me sit down or help me with my coat. I don't find that away from my power.
I don't either. And I like, and if my woman can get up and run the whole show, you know what? Whatever that show is, I'm going to sit and applaud.
Amen.
Dean, how about you? Would you marry a successful woman?
Would I marry a successful woman? Of course I would.
Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure.
Well, how are Americans perceived around the world? You know, sometimes I hear people out in Europe say, those Americans are lazy, or they're fat and lazy or something. I don't get a warm and fuzzy when I hear that sometimes, so... Hey, we're coming at you live here again, and we've got Dr. Andrea Pennington back with us, and Dean Menzel. And as you know, Dean is from Australia. I love Dean in Australia. You're lucky to be in Australia, Dean.
Oh, how you doing, Malcolm?
Well, listen. First of all, have you heard the term "the ugly American"?
Oh, of course. Sadly, I have.
Dean, yes. Have you heard it? Yeah.
Well, look, I think that, yes, it has come up a few times, just in other people's conversations. So, I mean, yeah, whether or not that's true or not, we'll be discussing that today, won't we?
We are certainly going to get into it. Let me throw it first at you, Andrea, and ask you this. You have a very unique vantage point that I do not have, and certainly Dean doesn't have it either. Most people listening probably don't have it. Well, some may, a handful, but as you've lived in both the States and Europe, and you're calling both, because you've been out there for some years now, so it's, I mean, this is home to you now, where you're at. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing it from both perspectives now. You've been here, you know what this is about. And when you were here, were you on the West Coast or East Coast?
A little bit of both. I did my medical training in the D.C. area, so I was there for a long while and then moved to L.A. before moving to the French Riviera. Okay. So I've had both flavors.
All right. So the term itself, talk to us, help people. First of all, what is the ugly American? Let's explain to people what it is.
Well, I guess, you know, it's this entire ball of stereotypes, right? So you mentioned it in the intro. Many people consider Americans fat. The biggest one that I hear most consistently is that we Americans are loud and that we love everything big, everything supersized. And unfortunately, over the last several years, people have called us not just the ugly Americans, but the dumb Americans. And I don't want to point any fingers, but I'll tell you, my time in Europe and France when George W. Bush was president was really hard. It was really a time to feel, love it or hate it, somewhat ashamed to be an American when people were looking at, you know, George W. as president and thinking, are all Americans that stupid? I'm just saying.
Well, even more so than now with Trump, you think?
Well, I think we went through a little halo period with President Obama because he's so well-spoken and classy. And now people just shake their heads. They look at me like, oh, you poor American. How did you end up with a president like Trump?
Really, yeah. Do you have confidence that he'll make it through this whole episode, Andrea? Do you think he'll get through it?
You know what, Malcolm, you and I talked about this before. I don't watch the news. I don't watch American news. It's filtered for me. And I'll be honest, with what gets filtered over to us over here in Europe, I do not believe he'll make it through. If I believe, you know, what people are saying, that some way or another he's going to step too far and get impeached or something, or something worse. But I think it's a scary time for Americans, because what he is such a gross caricature of many extremes, that if people abroad really do think that we Americans all are like Trump, then we're in trouble.
Yeah, that's why I'm getting a lot of funny vibrations, a lot of funny feelings, actually, from the way people are perceiving this around the world. Dean, you and I talked about this the other day, too, about I think the word you used, if I remember right, like being Trumpified, that people are being Trumpified out in Australia, like it's 24/7, like the news cycle is like, it's going over the cuckoo's nest, right?
That's right. That's pretty much all we're hearing about America at the moment. That, between that and Hollywood, I think that's all we're getting. So we're getting a perception of America that's all you are. So with Trump, we're getting a lot of conversation here, and it's sparking, I suppose, conversation about our own political system. But in terms of the view of America, it seems very, confusing, like whether or not America knows where it's going at the moment, because it's, you know, you've got this president here, but you've got all these people who are against him right now. So it's all like, you know, it sparked a lot of conversation as to how did he even get elected? You know, do Americans know what they're doing at the moment? So that's where we are in terms of the conversation about America at the moment, between that and, Brad and Angela and all the other stuff.
Well, they're not together anymore, right? She threw his ass out or something, I think, didn't she? Or...
Well, something like that. But, yeah. You know, we get a lot of entertainment.
I mean, why do you adopt like 150 kids and then throw him out? Does anybody have any idea what that means? I mean, why do you do that stuff, you know?
Oh, boy.
Andrea, I mean, am I wrong? If you're going to adopt kids, keep the kid. I mean, stay. I mean, but they adopted all these kids. They got like a couple of tribes, don't they? I mean, come on.
Well, honey, you know the deal. You still have to have harmony at home. So, you know, I don't believe in people staying together for the kids. And I know that's not a popular way to talk. But I feel like there can be a lot of tension in a home when parents are fighting and there's discord, and I think that sets children up for false expectations about the future. So, but I really feel for them, because it's hard being such a visible global couple. They're not even a Hollywood couple, they're global, and to have their whole divorce, you know, paraded out for the world to see and their children to see. I think that's a really tough spot to be in.
Yeah, they're global because their kids come from every country in the world.
I mean, yeah, they're touching the four corners of the earth, right? I mean,
they're really doing that, yeah. Sidetracked us entirely.
Right. I'm so sorry. I brought in Brangelina to this and it's all gone astray.
You did it, Dean. You did it. It's wrong, man. So speaking of this ugly American, by the way, if you know this, was the name of the book back in 1958, right?
Oh, I didn't. Seen that.
Did you know, Dean?
No, I had no idea.
It was a political novel back in 1958 by Eugene Burdick and William Lederer. And it depicted the failures of the U.S. In Southeast Asia. And Kennedy, President Kennedy, liked the book so much that he got it for all the members of Congress to teach them a lesson. It was about being their view of Americans being a little ostentatious and a little out there, man. And that's where the ugly American term came from.
Wow, that's like a little bit of history. Love it.
And then other countries have kind of, tied on to that a little bit, thinking that, you know, you remember it was the U.S. and the Soviet Union and all that was going on back then in 1958. That was the heart of it. And that was before I was born, I want to announce to everybody. I'm not old enough to be there, so I'm still a young. See? That's good.
I was going to say, I don't recognize it, but thank you. I'm glad that none of us were alive when that book came out originally. Thank you.
Yeah, no, we weren't alive. I wasn't, you weren't, and I don't think you were either, Dean. So,
but No.
No, I know, you're younger there. But are you in your 30s, Dean, or what?
I'm actually 42.
I didn't think so. 42? Wow, you look great, honey.
Oh, thank you, darling.
Yeah, you look great. We should have pictures on the radio so they can all see us. Well, you go to the website, AmericaOutloud.com, and you'll see the photos of all these beautiful women and how great they are, because we have some brilliant people. You've been listening to these shows. You know that it's been, like, remarkable. Some of the conversation has been pretty crazy. You never know what's coming out. That's kind of what I like about this this show and this production. But anyway, so The Suddenly American was a book back in 1958. And like I said, President Kennedy really, really liked it, the message. Maybe he didn't like the facts or the stats of why the book became the book, but it was true. People were perceived that way back then around the world. So I wonder how much has changed since then, if it's changed at all. Are Americans still perceived as being, a little ostentatious, or a little, as we said when we opened up, Andrea, a little lazy, maybe they think. But, you know, I kind of get a little pissed off when people call Americans lazy, because I don't find that we're lazy. I find Americans are very innovative. I think that we look at all the things we've accomplished and invented here in America.
Yeah, that is very true. We are innovative, and we're actually hard workers. I mean, we're so entrepreneurial. But you know what's been interesting over here in France? I am surprised at the number of people who watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians and all of the spinoffs. You know, to your point earlier, Dean, a lot of the Hollywood vibe is what gets filtered over here to Europe. And so people think that everyone is like the Kardashians. You know, I was at the hairdresser a couple of weeks ago, and this woman came in and she says, "Oh, I'm flying to America. Oh, I'm going to have the Kardashian life." And I looked at her like, you know that that's like fake. It's not real, and not all Americans are that way. But well, people think that that's what we are.
Well, it's an interesting point that you make there. I had some friends, I haven't actually been to America myself, but I have had some friends who have gone, and they actually expected them to pull out a knife like Crocodile Dundee. I don't know if you've seen Crocodile Dundee with Paul Hogan, but that was one of the
of course sort
of movies.
He was a big star here, big celebrity. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's how a lot of the Americans viewed my friends, in terms of, you know, that, you know, like we run around chase, you know, fighting crocodiles and all sorts of things. And it was quite interesting, because they're there saying, oh, no, you know, Australia's not like that at all. You know, Australia is, we've got beaches and, you know, we're pretty laid back. And no, we don't have big knives and run around in, you know, leather vests and leather pants and a Cobra hat. So no, so it's an interesting thing of in terms of how others see another country, and it is really filtered through, as you said, by what they see on television or in the movies. So it's I just wanted to follow on from your point there, Andrea.
Well, everybody also think? Always they also think that like all of Americans have a lot of money, a lot of wealth, and that's also, like you say, you know, I remember back in the Cold War, back in the 60s, late 60s, mid 60s, late 60s, early 70s, there used to always be a comment that was always being said about how the Soviet Union could defeat America in the Cold War, and they could do it without ever using a nuclear weapon, and they could defeat America by buying every American a Cadillac. Because we'd kill ourselves on the highway, because we drive like stupid bastards and we're fat and lazy and so on and so forth. So if they just buy us each a Cadillac, we would just kill each other.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, and that was it. And that's how the Soviet Union was going to kill America. Now, they never did buy the Cadillacs for us, clearly. And obviously, we didn't kill each other either. But that was kind of the talk on the street kind of thing. But so I've been, you know, this whole ugly American thing and the perception of it. Obviously, we can all agree that as polarizing as Donald Trump has been for politics here in America and around the world, and let's face it, his foreign policy hasn't even really started yet. I mean, he's just meeting with some foreign leaders slowly but surely, but it really is not in full swing yet. This is really a very new and early on in the administration. And yet, here is, you know, that perception has flowed out throughout the world, and people have these perceptions like if he's, because he's different, he's a character, he's, you know, he was a showman, he was a reality star, he was a Hollywood, back to Hollywood, Dean, he was a Hollywood guy, he was a, you know.
Ronald Reagan.
Reagan was too. Reagan was too. And Reagan, I thought Ronald Reagan was a great president. We've had a lot of messed up presidents since then. But Andre, you were living here back then at that time. Did you like Reagan as a president?
Well, I was very young at the time, so I don't think I had the sense to evaluate him. But I can at least tell you that my impression was never that he was just a dumb actor who became a politician. Like, he still had sense, but he was a much different character, right? He was never someone to just pop off and say things, you know, out of the side of his head. So I think he had a lot more respect.
And That's the problem. That's the Trump problem right there. No, you hit it head on. Dean, that's what I'm saying. And, you know, we all want Trump to succeed. And believe me, I definitely do. No question about it. But, you know, there's a consequence is what we're saying here. And what you're saying, Andrea, is there's a consequence when you talk half stupid half the time. Again, you know, it becomes perceived as disrespectful. It becomes perceived as ignorant, as stupid.
And that's the biggest problem that most of us over here are talking about when it comes to foreign policy. He doesn't have a clue. He has zero clue in his own brain about certain countries and their political regime. And so, unfortunately, before he was elected, we thought, oh, God, you know, he doesn't have the experience or the intelligence, sorry to say. That's, you know, that's our outside looking in kind of view. But we thought that hopefully he would have some good advisors around him. But I don't know that he's necessarily even listening to the advisors. You know, just looking at how he behaved with Angela Merkel from Germany, I thought, oh my heavens, we're in trouble.
Just in terms of Donald Trump, I mean, like, we've all seen Donald Trump, you know, over the years. And, you know, if he was going to be elected president, I don't think his personality was going to change for it just because he became president. He's going to be Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Well, you got to say something about that, too. You know, there's something to be said about being authentic. So if you're an asshole, at least you're an asshole. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
that's a thing. He's not going to. I would be actually even a little bit more surprised if he became quite reserved being president, because
he's not going to be at all. But here, on the flip side of that, you know, they got tired, Andrea, from your point of view just a moment ago, of the career politician. So when you talk about experience, well, he didn't know these countries. No president really knows them until they get it. Barack Obama was a junior senator. He couldn't tie his shoelaces in Washington until he got in there. I mean, you know, so he didn't know anything either. But you don't know anything. But the problem is Trump plays like the big man on campus, is what you're saying. And he talks, you know, half-wittedly. And you hear all these strange comments come out of his mouth. And that does him a lot of damage. And now people around the world are flipping their heads. And people here are like saying... And the problem with all that is he created a lot of enemies. These groups can't stand him. I mean, these various, the ethnicities, certain groups can't stand him. Now they're making headway maybe on some days, you think, or something else. But I think a lot of that was just him trying to get a rise out of people. Now, some may say it's smart. He played brilliantly to the core group, and he got the nod. He did what nobody thought he could ever do. Defeated all those senators, and he defeated governors and successful people, and he won. He slam dunked them all.
Yeah. Well, I think the political tide and the social unrest in America set the stage for him to make those kinds of sweeping crazy promises that I'm curious to see if there's any way he could ever keep them. But Malcolm, you know what you just brought up about, you know, polarizing these different groups and racial tension. As a black woman, I am really, really scared. I am really scared for what is happening to minorities, as Trump has made it very clear that you can just say whatever you want about various races, about women. I have to say, I'm very grateful that I'm not raising my daughter in America right now, because the types of language that I've heard thrown around black people and around women is just disgusting.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's pick that up right after the break with Dr. Andrea Pennington and Dean Menzel. It's good connecting from Monaco in Australia and here in the States at an undisclosed location. We
are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do, include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell. I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America Out Loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan, plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping, and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com, or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com.
You are listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. I am Dr. Andrea Pennington, joined by Dean Menzel in the sunny and beautiful Australia, as well as Malcolm Out Loud in the U.S. of A. So, Malcolm, before we jumped off onto the break, I brought up my fear, my literal fear about being a minority in America, being a black woman. In particular, because with the type of conversation that our dear President Trump feels so comfortable saying about various racial ethnicities and about women and our genitalia, I'm very glad that I'm out of the country with my daughter. But I want to hear from you, Dean, and I want to hear from you, Malcolm. Do you think that we Americans are suffering now? Are we going to see, you know, a regression of 20, 30 years based on these types of really inflammatory comments coming out of Trump's mouth?
I think that he's shaking it up. And I think that there's a lot of unrest in America. And I think that after this, things are going to change. Because, like, I think that things don't change when things get too comfortable. And where you've got minority groups, I mean, like, remember the French Revolution, you know, things happened because, you know, people were unhappy. And I think that there's a lot of unhappiness in America, that things are going to change. That's what I think. It's going to get to a boiling point, and then I think things are going to change. And whether or not Trump's, I might even throw this spanner in the works and say whether or not he's re-elected, or whether or not he's thrown out, there will be a shift.
Yeah, I think the shift is underway. I think the level of unrest and darkness and racism is reaching a boiling point. And I totally agree with you, Dean. Things are going to change. My fear is that things are going to change for the worse for a while before they get better. Mm-hmm.
Well, excellent analysis, Dean, as well, in saying that, you know, that people just got fed up. They had enough, they had too much, and that change was the order of the day, and that there was the perception was not good. And you feel that's how Trump got in, was to rock the canoe, right, Dean, is what you're saying?
Well, I think so. I mean, like, there are a lot of when you've got a president there, I think that there are people behind it that get people to where they are too. So, you know, whether or not it money or you know, having the right team behind you, but he's there for a reason, and I know that a lot of people are suffering there in America. Obviously, like, you can see that Beverly sort of being on the outside now, and we can sort of see that in Australia, sort of like from far away, we can feel that kind of energy coming out of America. But I think that yes, there will be a point where enough will be enough, and something will have to shift. And whether or not he actually listens and changes it, because I don't think, whether or not on the surface he seemed to be a stupid, arrogant man, mm-hmm. and on the surface to many people he is, but he actually may surprise and may change it around.
See,
we just don't know until it happens.
Interesting. Now, Dean, let me jump in here, because I think that comment probably surprised Andrea, because she was thinking that in your earlier comments that you were poo-pooing him in the bigger sense, and I knew you weren't, because I knew you weren't. And I think you kind of thought maybe that, Andrea, and now she's saying, like, okay, he could really turn this around, and there could be a lot of things happen. But either way, America was going to change, and somebody was going to come in and change it, that the country was ripe for that, for whatever. But I want to bring it back. Before we go there, I want to bring it back, Andrea, to your initial question and what you were talking about as a black woman, as a minority, living abroad now, so on and so forth, and you think the different ethnicities have been hit hard. Talk to me on, I want to understand for a moment, and help me here, please, because I really want to understand this. What has, I want to use the black community first, not women. What has he done to the black community that has that makes you say that, or that has it the whole conversation up in arms? What has he done? What, tell me what that is.
Well, it's not just blacks. I think it's also fair to bring in Latinos. Obviously, Latinos have probably been more of a target with this whole concept of building this wall between the U.S. and Mexico, but he has made it very clear in his speeches that he considers African Americans to be less intelligent and worthy of not as high pay as their white counterparts. And just the
now, that's your opinion, or you've heard him say that?
I've heard him make statements to that effect.
Okay.
So his whole feeling towards minorities and saying that we need to make America great again without acknowledging the people who have contributed to the making of America. You know, we're talking about, you know, black people as slaves. And yes, we are talking about Latinos and Mexicans who have historically taken on jobs that their white counterparts would not have. So rather than, you know, making it sound as though they're stealing jobs, in many cases, Mexicans were taking on jobs that nobody else wanted. And so to have this whole sentiment that we have got to stop immigration, build this wall, and make America pure, well, America was never pure. If we really trace it back, then we should be giving the land back to the Native Americans that, you know, our European friends just completely destroyed and marginalized. So, I mean, Malcolm, I'm sorry, don't get me started on this.
This is great.
It's your feelings. But it infuriates me, because that's what we're hearing in the media. And the idea that we're going to be raising children. Now, remember, people are not born racist. They learn racism. They learn these sorts of bigotry and preference. And so now, if we see the highest leader in the land making these kinds of comments about other races, what do you think that the other children that are now growing up are going to be doing?
Well, here's the thing, that I think most of the people that you're speaking about are learning their racism habits from their parents.
Yes, yeah, I think so. I think it all starts in the home.
I don't think it comes from Trump. I think it comes from their parents and those around them, quite frankly. And quite frankly, racism is the most idiotic thing in the world. It is so ridiculous that any race, anybody, thinks that they have some sort of a superior position on another human being is beyond my conscience. I don't get it. It is ridiculous. Okay?
Well, agreed.
Malcolm, just in terms of the last show that I was talking on, we were talking about racism in that show as well. And I'd mentioned that I live in a very sort of multicultural community here.
That's right.
You know, half of my neighbours are Muslim. Right down the road from me is a Muslim school. And I remember when I was working in Melbourne, in the city of Melbourne, and there was a girl there. And so I had just moved to this suburb or this town. And, you know, she said to me, did you know that, you're right down the street from a Muslim school. And I said, I'm very aware of that. She goes, aren't you worried? And I said, worried about what? And it was interesting because there were other people's perceptions on what this area is. But it's an absolutely thriving area, probably one of the biggest growing areas in Melbourne. And the community is just gorgeous. Half of my friends are Muslim. And it's just interesting to see people's perceptions about different cultures and their take on racism as well.
It is. But, you know, I have said before, and I will say it again, that the world is unique. The people in the world are unique. And I think you would do yourself a favor out there if you will embrace culture as such a beautiful thing. Because if we did not have these uniquenesses in all of us, this world would be a very unhappy place, and it would look boring as hell. Okay? And it would just not be unique. So you got to love your sisters and brothers, whoever they are, and be blessed for that. Now, having said that, embracing the culture is important, and knowing who we are as people is important. Andrea, the wall and the minorities, again, the ethnicities that Trump has, they've become so hot against him, and then the women problem that he had. Of course, he got more of the women vote than they thought he was going to get, which is how he got in, actually. I think people got tired of politics as usual. I think this country has been broken for quite a while, actually, that it's back to the, you know, his slogan. What is it? Make America Great Again? Yeah. It's a restoration project, I guess I would call it. But if you look back at the many administrations, we did not have good successful years with the Obama administration. We did not have good successful years with the Bush administration. You can go back a lot of years throughout many, many presidencies and find that this country has been struggling. Mm. That's with both political parties. And that's where a lot of this hatred has built up to a feverish point. I think Trump just happens to be the right dude in the right place, or the wrong dude in the wrong time, or the wrong place, whatever. But he's the guy at the moment. And he said some pretty stupid things from time to time that has got himself into hot water. I mean, you know, you got to be careful. If you put a little honey out there, you're liable to attract a lot of flies. Mm-hmm. See? And he's got a whole lot of flies because he's been, you know, putting a lot of bad honey out there to some degree with some of his talks. People say that's hate speech or this, that. I don't know. But, you know, a lot of the other stuff has been taken out of context, in all fairness. I gave Trump a hard time on national radio as a commentator. I absolutely did, as I did all the candidates, because I thought they all needed to be given a hard time. If we're going to elect the leader of the free world, we're going to give them a hard time and know who the hell they are, right? Now, with Trump, this whole thing of the wall and the rest of it, I have to at least say, Andrea, this. See, I think the media took. I think the media is the enemy with everything you just talked about a moment ago. I don't think that problem is Trump's specifically. Now, I think him talking trash with Billy Bush in the trailer with the mics. I mean, it was just a stupid thing. I mean, and I want you to stop a minute. Stop just a minute, please, everybody. Think about the stupidest thing you've ever said in the world. Think just a minute. What's the stupidest thing you ever said? Right? You've said some stupid crap, and you wish you could take it back. And it was pretty rough when you said it. Like you'd like to do what to who, or who to what, or what to sing, or right or wrong. We've all done some stupid things.
We have, Malcolm, but he has never backed down. He has never backed down. I mean, sure, he says, yeah, yeah, that was locker room talk. It wasn't locker room talk. And the way he belittles
women. I think he was impressing Billy Bush. I think he was impressing. You know, you're a big, Andrea, believe me, I don't think he does that for life. I don't think he treats women that way. That would have been flushed out by now if that happened. I think
there were countless women.
How that's all gone away?
I don't think it's gone away. I don't think it's gone away. Yes, I think some people were paid off.
I haven't heard a peep. No one's been paid off. I haven't heard a peep. Come on.
I have a question for Andrea. Putting aside Trump, what he says, if he can actually change the country to make it better, including all the minority groups and actually do an amazing job, would it matter what he says?
Well, the question is, how do you create change if it's not even on your agenda? he doesn't have an agenda to improve race relations or improve things for minorities per se.
That's not he's true. Saying, that is not
he's
true.
Saying overall for all of America.
No, but, I'm going to defend him here, love. That's not
okay,
true.
Well, enlighten me,
Ben
Malcolm.
Well, I'm going to enlighten you right now, love. He's got Ben Carson, who is running HUD, who is now out. His goal has been to help the inner cities out, to help education out, and to get people to work and to do the things that need to be done. He has consistently said that, Andrea, about the inner cities and about. I mean, he has said it more than Barack Obama said it. I mean, come on. What did Barack Obama do for the inner cities? Exactly. So, I mean, at least this guy says something. Now, will he deliver? I pray he delivers on this. And I pray that Ben Carson keeps a fire under his ass. I hope they all do and make him accountable for what he said he's going to do. But I think there's nothing wrong. I think we need to save our cities. We need to help people out. And we need to get into the inner cities and help folks out. No question about it. Now, the comments in the media, I have to say, with the wall business, he made some comments with his when he said he was going to run for president, and he talked about people coming over the line, coming over the border and stuff. And he talked about, you know, that there's rapists and criminals and things like that. Andre, that's all true. That's all true.
But that's true. That's true of every race.
Yeah, but that's correct. He was talking about a wall in Mexico at the time, and he should have clarified it better. You're right in that regard. He should have clarified it better and said, because it really wasn't about Mexicans. It was about people that are criminalized, criminals coming over. See, we have a real problem in this country with no borders. Europe is struggling and suffering right now with no borders. Ask Angela Merkel how that's going. Ask France how that's going.
But it's not only murderers and rapists and criminals that want to enter America or enter any other country. When you look at the numbers of people who are coming into America for better jobs or other countries, they either want asylum or they want a better life for their families. It's not just criminals who want to immigrate.
But you come in legally then. You don't break the law. And this is where our politicians, the media, and people in general have screwed up. We have not protected this country. We have not used our laws in a good way. I love people. I love people. I love people of all kinds. I want to see people safe. I want to right the wrongs. I want to justify the injustices. You know that, Andre? My heart is huge. It's big. I want to do all that. But you know what? I don't want to leave our borders open. I you know what? You put a freaking wall.
But do you really
up.
Think it needs a wall? Is that the solution?
Well, I, you know, it needs many things. Many things, Andrea, many things. And it's got to start. You have to. Here's the problem. We know. It's been proven already. The bad guys are coming across. It's not even the illegal folks who are going out to work at, you know, find a living and try to have a better quality of life. There are many who would argue that's the destroying of the fabric of society in America, that we have let it down now by just having this, you know, this illegal immigration program, whereas America, back to the ugly American, there are a lot of people who believe that America is a place they want to be, and they want to live in a prosperous society. They want more in life. But yet, you know, I got to tell you, the Veritas Project is an organization here in North America. They did a research program this past couple of years here, big time, about a year ago, as the election was happening. And they had people come in from Canada. They put masks over their heads. They look like, they look like ISIS terrorists. They look like bad cats. And they put those mask caps all over their faces, and they drove electric motorboats from Canada, the Canadian provinces, into our cities, in our museums in Cleveland, the Great Lakes, right into these cities. And they got right off the damn boats and walked right in. And that was their experiment to show how vulnerable we are. That's on the northern border that nobody is talking about. We already have declarations. We know the bad cats. The ISIS folks are definitely coming over the southern border. So you know what? If it's a wall, if it's more security, if it's watching everything we need to watch down there, I think we're a target. I think we're a target, man. I think Islam wants us dead.
Well, it's an interesting thing because, like, you know, there's a lot of fear. I think since 9/11 and, you know, us seeing as well from Australia, the world has just gone into this whole fear thing where we can't see I think one whole culture now is now stereotyped and needs this whole screening process to make sure that we're all going to be safe. And we never had that before, not as much as since 9/11.
Well, it's like going to the airport now. Going to the airport is such a chore. You used to be, I remember going to the airport years ago before, well, this is before 9/11, pre-9/11, and, you know, and then before and after 9/11. And before, you used to be able to drag down an airplane. You could run out on the tarmac and jump on a plane. I did it. I did it on the islands coming back. I was always the guy that was late. And I'd flag the plane down, grab your bag, and run like hell. You catch the plane, you're on. Count me in. And you can see me doing that. Now you do that, they'd shoot you.
But I believe that you know, in any religion, there is, I mean, it, all religions, I believe, begin with, we're all down to it, down to the ground. We're all good people. We all have good intentions, and we all actually have a religion.
But we all don't have good intentions, Dean. That couldn't be further from the truth, wrong, hon. We don't all have good intentions. There are a lot of evil people on the planet who don't have good intentions and want to kill us.
But they're all not born that way. They learn.
Well, they're not born. They're training them when the kids are 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. They're putting them in school. Have you seen? I'll send you videos. It'll make you sick. Make sure you have a vomit bag near you.
I believe you, but I believe that these sections of people are learning a warped version of what their religion would be. Because I believe when it comes down to it, every religion originally started out with a good intention for betterment. We all want to be better people. We all want to, you know, we're all spiritual in some kind of way, whatever that may be. And I think that, you know, along the way, something has happened. Something has warped.
Dean, I wish that was true, but it's not. It's not true. I wish what you're saying was true. But it's not true. I'm a lover of all people, I get it, but I'm not ignorant, and I'm not going to put my head underneath the rock or the sand here and pretend that things don't exist and live in a la-la-la land, because that is not the way it is. And on that note, we shall return.
You're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure, and I am Dean Menzel, joined by Dr. Andrea Pennington and Malcolm Out Loud. And I just want to bring up the topic of pleasure and also career women. Is having a career something that we should feel guilty about as women, or can we be both career and mum and have the best of both worlds? What do you think, Andrea?
Yes, we can have it all. Now, it doesn't mean we're always going to have it all and always be feeling pleasure. But, you know, we in America we women have had to step it up. And particularly if we want to talk about, you know, black women in America taking over the breadwinner role. If you look at statistically, women are bringing in more bacon than their male counterparts. Even if they're in a relationship. And I think we're learning more about the individual nature of work-life balance. Like, work-life balance is just a stupid concept. There is no such thing. It's really individual. But I find that we women in America are realizing that having a career as well as being a mom is deeply fulfilling, because we're not just baby makers and breastfeeders. We have minds, we have creativity, we have innovation, and women are adding a lot to the entrepreneurial pie.
And for me, this is really not a brand new conversation. And if I could just say this to you both, because I take a lot of pride and glee in saying what I'm going to say next. Here we go. I spent 27 years in corporate boardrooms, and I find businesswomen are some of the most successful beings on the planet. I've promoted more women in my life as the owner and CEO of that company. I want to make sure you know that. That was my role, so it wasn't like I was saying that. And by the way, and I've worked with women in the boardroom, and I've worked for women in the boardroom, and I'd take that any day of the week in many cases, because they are brilliant. They are able to deal with their emotions better. They're better multitaskers. They're better personalities. And they're a hell of a lot better to look at.
Well, thank you, Malcolm. Thank you for your forward thinking all those years in the C-suite. We need more men like you, because unfortunately women, I don't know how it is in Australia, but in America, women are still earning less than their male counterparts.
See, that's ridiculous. That pisses me off when that's said. Another thing that bothers me, Andrea, is the politicians like Barack Obama and the guy before him, George Bush, and all the other clowns who say that, oh, we're gonna do the same thing for women as we do for men. Do you know they have never done that? And you know why? Because they paid women less in the White House than they did the men and their counterparts. So you know what? Everybody who says that is just a lying bunch of crap.
So, Malcolm, how do we change it? How do we change it?
We demand that women should absolutely be paid. There should be no deviation from that. Whether you are black, white, Asian, it doesn't matter, Indian, whether you are female, male, whether you're 6 feet or 5'3", whether you have big eyes, small eyes, you know what? It doesn't matter. It comes down to your capabilities as a human being. It comes down to your brains and your willingness to work. And if your willingness and you're aggressive to do it, and that's one of the things, by the way, I love about America. One of the things I love about America is we are a rich and diverse country. And I do believe our best is ahead in this particular category, because I'm a very big proponent, and you're going to see that, Andrea, ahead, because we're going to work together ahead in the think tanks and the other projects I'm going to have ahead. Somehow you're going to be part of those things. And we're gonna slay this thing down and bring in. Just take a look at the America Out Loud platform. Go look at the host. Go look at the experts. Go look at the people we have involved.
I see it, but Malcolm, you are one forward-thinking man who's willing to take that stand. We all have the same belief that all humans should be paid based on their merit and their worth and their dedication and their skills. But how do we change the, move the dial
well, the
on
ones
what's
who aren't,
actually
here's how
happening?
We do it. Here's how we got to do it. The women who are not being paid their share, there has to be a movement. Like everything else in the world, Andrea, it has to happen when people stand up. Just like they did when Martin Luther King Jr. was here, love. Same thing, right? Right or wrong?
Yeah, you're right. So
we got on the streets
we're
and we
need,
marched.
There you go.
We've got the same problem here in Australia. And I'm just wondering, we've had a female leader politically here.
I wish we'd have one here, but I want a Margaret Thatcher type who can come in and kick their asses.
Right. Do you need an Iron Lady?
I need an Iron Lady. Give me an Iron Lady, and I'd vote a woman for president yesterday, if it's the right one. I mean, 100%.
Difference, though, I'm just wondering whether or not even having a woman president would, like, for example, if Hillary got elected, would there be equal pay?
No, because she's as corrupt as the others are. No, because you have to have heart and soul. It's not about the woman doing that. It's got to be the right woman. And
your comment about Margaret Thatcher, if you're talking about heart and soul, honey, she's not it. I mean, Margaret was brilliant and she was tough, but look at how masculine Margaret Thatcher was.
No, I know.
You know, are we ever going to have a woman?
Yeah, but Andrea, you're the rare exception. Come on now, stop it. You're not the norm, hon. I mean, they all don't look like you, act like you, talk like you, have brains like you, and make love like you, I am sure. And if they did, we'd all be married to people like you, I got to tell you.
Well, we're talking about taking the presidency. When are we going to have a woman who can actually be girly and be feminine and yet still be respected for her intelligence and her drive and her ambition?
I don't know.
Do we need an Iron Lady, or do we need a truly balanced woman
who is... You're going to have to be an Iron Lady. Like if Melania Trump had run, you know, she's smart, she's intelligent, she's beautiful, but she would have never made it. So the girly girl and the brains, you know, no, you're right. I got to say, see, it's sexist.
What about Michelle Obama? I mean, like there was talk of her.
About her running? She didn't want to run for anything. She was so over it. She wanted to get the hell out of Washington so quick.
Like her, whether or not she wanted to run or not, would somebody like her, do you think that she would create that kind of a change?
Well, if you're asking Andrea, she probably would say yes. For me, I would say I'm looking for more of a conservative person. I don't want somebody that wants lots of government and that wants to charge more taxes and take our quality of life down. More taxes, more government. Again, tell me anything government does well. show me some agencies that the government excels at, and I'll eat a banana boat, okay? It doesn't exist. And I'll
I agree with you on that point in terms of what does the government actually
Amen,
do
hallelujah.
Well.
Andrea finally agreed with me.
I know. But having a strong political leader who could at least be a voice for some type of equality that could trickle down to companies, to CEOs finally promoting women and giving women the types of equal pay that they deserve, I think we could still have a strong political leader to set the tone. But I agree with you. We don't need more government because more government tends to muck things up.
Right, right. Amen. You know, you bring up an interesting dilemma, Andre, and I got to say, I got to confess to you, I simply do not have the answer. And I'm sorry, I apologize. I don't have the answer, but you bring up a hell of a, I never thought of it that way, but I can't see how it would work. I have to confess. And I know that sounds rude, but if somebody came along that had all the brilliant qualities of a strong politician and the brains and the intellect and the people skills that are needed, and they were sexually interesting, they were able to act girly-girly or whatever the hell you want to call it, I guess you call it, or whatever. I mean, you know, like a real lady. Or I don't know. I mean, how the hell do you – How do you compute all that, Andrea? You tell me. I mean, even today, if you're a strong man and a strong woman and you walk into a building, are you supposed to open the door for the woman, Andrea?
Well, I think a gentleman would still open the door.
I do. Thank you very much. I go for the door handle no matter who it is, whether she's going to slap me in the head or beat me over the head with something or say, hey, great. Thanks, man.
Well, I don't speak for all women. I never pretend to. I am a feminine girly girl, and I wear my alpha bitch pants when I need to get shit done. But yes, I appreciate a man who is still going to open the door and, you know, let me sit down or help me with my coat. I don't find that away from my power.
I don't either. And if my woman can get up and run the whole show, you know what? Whatever that show is, I'm going to sit and applaud.
Amen.
Dean, how about you? Would you marry a successful woman?
Would I marry a successful woman? Of course I would. I'd do it for the money.
I love it.
All right, I want to see where you're going with that, Dean. So you're smart, Dean. You're smart.
Oh, look, I'm a girly girl too, actually, you know, but then at the same time, you know, when needed, I, talk the talk, walk the walk. Yeah, I'm just sort of wondering about this equal pay thing. And I'm just wondering if there are women entrepreneurs, you don't have to worry about wages, do you? I mean, like, if there are women entrepreneurs, you make your own money.
Well, there are a lot of women who are getting into it, right, Andrea?
Yeah, I think it depends on where you are in your entrepreneurial journey. There are certainly women who get into the space who feel like in order to compete, they have to be priced less than their male counterparts. But yes, I think when you get to a certain level of confidence and competence, a female entrepreneur can earn even more than her male counterpart.
So what about this other thing you pose about, can a woman become president and have all of the qualities that are needed to be a strong, good leader and be a, as you say, feminine? Can that happen?
I think it can. You know, to Dean's point earlier about the possibility of someone like, I'm not saying Michelle, but someone like Michelle Obama. You know, she's an incredibly intelligent woman, well-spoken woman, well-educated, and yet she still looks like a female. She still looks like a woman. She can be fun. She can be a mom. I think there are more women like us who will rise up in the ranks. I don't know when that's going to take place, and I don't know who she's going to be.
It just dawns on me. You got to remember, though, ladies, I mean, we've gone through generations and generations and hundreds of years of women not being in that role.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to change overnight, that's for sure.
That's my point, Andrea. I mean, you've got to bring it back to the cave days. And, you know, he woke up in the morning and said,
I don't know. Well, we can fast forward a little bit to the Amazonian days where women were really running stuff and Egypt, you know, ancient Egypt. You know, women haven't always been looked at as second-class citizens. You know, it's that fear of the feminine power. So when I'm talking about a woman being feminine, I'm not talking about girly girl like lipstick and high heels for the sake of girliness. I'm talking about a woman stepping into her divine feminine energy where she is a full embodiment of both masculine and feminine, or yin and yang energy. And I believe that a woman like that can be powerful. But how long is it going to take us to get back to that place where women are truly in their power, not wielding it over men? It's not about edging out men or showing men that we're better. It's just about being in our full divine power. I think that is what's on the horizon, but it's going to take some time before we rise up and see that woman standing as president.
You agree with that, Dean?
Look, I do agree, and we're seeing some changes here in Australia. For the first time, women are playing football alongside, not alongside the men, but they've got their own league now. And the response to it here in Australia has been phenomenal. It's just been phenomenal.
I'd go see women football. Play football, absolutely. Hot second, well, man.
Especially, hey, go for it.
Especially when they're bent over and they're taking the absolutely, here we go.
That's an interesting, see, I don't look at it that way.
I mean, well, it's football. You have to bend over and you have to bring the ball between your legs to get it to the quarterback, right?
Is she talking about football or soccer? Do you guys have football in Australia, or do you have soccer?
It's not soccer. Football is soccer in, I think, Europe, but football here is with the oval. I'm not sure if you've seen AFL, but it's with the it's like a oval ball. You kick it through some goals, like you.
It's like American football.
I got to ask you: is that disrespectful to be a man and?
You know?
Is that disrespectful to be a man and go to a woman football game and want to see them bend over and have the football go? Is that wrong? Is that disrespectful?
No, it's just
disrespectful if the woman.
You're a man.
Women are worse than we are. You do the same thing. You watch the men when they bend over to football games to see what size testicles they have. Get out of here. You do the same thing, Andrea. Andrea, come on. That's a double standard now. You're playing a double standard.
No, Malcolm, you said you would go in order to see these women in their little tight stuff bending over. A woman doesn't go for that. A woman happens to maybe go, you know, whether she's a sports fanatic or not, or she's with her beloved, and as a bonus, she gets to see the bulging muscles and maybe some testicles.
Was that?
But she doesn't go for the testicles.
As a bonus or a bona? Which one did you say there?
There you go.
And on that, to be continued.